This is Digital Story Podcast number 543, August 2nd, 2016. Today's theme is Make Mine Macro, Please. I'm Derek Story. I want more macro in my life. I love being able to close focus on a subject without having to change lenses. In fact, changing lenses, although very necessary at times, is a real buzzkill, especially when I have a shot before me that's ready to be captured. So in today's show, I'm going to talk about why you may want to add more macro to your life. So I did a search on the B&H site for Micro Four Thirds zoom lenses, you know, standard zooms, that had macro capability. And I came up with one lens that included, you know, real close-up functionality, the Olympus 12 to 50 millimeter f3.5 to 6.3. And I thought this was interesting and not in a good way. So the reason why this whole thing is coming up, it's bubbling up to the top of my brain, therefore is coming through your speakers or earphones right now, is because when I've been working with other cameras, my Olympus TG4 that I talked about last week, that has this killer macro functionality built into it. They call it microscope mode. Now, I'm not sure why they call it microscope mode. I mean, when I first saw that, I go, wow, do I have to like get an adapter or something? No, it's just really close-up photography that you can do handheld. You don't even need a microscope, right? It's a macro mode. Just call it macro. But anyway, it's great. And I was, what was I doing? Oh, I know. I was running errands on my bike, and I stopped by one of my favorite places to eat on the way back from errands, which, you know, I'm not so sure how much ahead I come out on this deal. You know, I ride bike to burn calories, and then I stop at Rubio's. They make tacos. I stop at Rubio's on the way back to the studio, and then, you know, I have two tacos and some chips. Maybe I break even on the deal. But anyway, one of the reasons why I like Rubio's on my way back from my ride is because they have an outdoor patio that has shade. So it's really comfortable, especially in the summer like this. And I can park my bike right outside the patio there, chain it up, and it's right there. So I can see it the whole time that I'm having lunch. I don't have to worry about if someone's, you know, got bolt cutters, you know, out going after, you know, my bike lock or anything. You know, I stop there. I have my tacos. My bike's right there. It's very nice. You can people watch because it's near the entrance of the plaza where people come and go. And of course, I always have my camera with me. And last week when I was making my run, I had the TG4 in my pocket. And, you know, I thought, well, I might take a shot here or there. You know how it is. It's always good to have a camera with you. Well, the thing that I noticed while I was eating lunch was that there were these lavender bushes right by where my bike was chained up. And I was watching, and the bees were just having a fantastic time. Just crazy. I don't know if the flowers were in the perfect state or if it was a nice day, whatever. So I was watching them while I was having my tacos, and I said, you know what? I'm going to go get some shots. I've got this camera in my pocket. It has a close-up mode, a microscope mode, and I'm just going to go get some shots. I go ahead and, you know, put my dish in the dish rack, all that stuff there that you do. And so I'm a good citizen. I always clean up after myself. And I wander out over by my bike, and I'm walking through the lavender, you know, with my camera. And then, you know how it is when you're trying to shoot bees or butterflies or, you know, anything that's flying around. It's a bit of a challenge. And I'm sure the people that were inside the restaurant or at the patio there were probably quite entertained watching me, you know, trying to take these bee pictures on lavender flowers in macro mode, because I'm sure it isn't a pretty sight when you're watching from the outside. However, I don't care about that, and you probably figured that out already. So the upshot is, though, that I got some really good shots. I mean, I really like them a lot. In fact, I posted one on Instagram, and it did really well. People liked it. And, You know, the whole reason why I got that shot, the whole reason why everything happened the way that it did is because I had macro mode on the camera that I had with me. And I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to bring an extra lens. I didn't have to change lenses. I didn't have to do any of that stuff. And in fact, the other shot that I took while I was wandering around in the Lavender, entertaining the folks eating tacos and Rubios, was I had my Pentax. I was testing, which one was it? Oh, it was a P3. I was testing a Pentax P3 for the Etsy, the film camera shop. And I had just a regular Pentax zoom on there. I think it was the 35-70, which has a macro mode. It's just right there. It has macro mode. So does the 28-80 Pentax A zoom. By the way, I like the Pentax A zooms because they work on all the cameras, and cameras that have automatic mode, you can shoot in program mode with them. But the Pentax 28-80 has a macro mode. My Contax/Zeiss 35-70 f3.4 has a macro mode. My Minolta 28-70 zoom lens that I put on the X700, macro mode. They all have macro modes on it. So I was sort of wondering, why do all these cameras and lenses from, you know, back in the Stone Age, why do they have macro mode built in? And then when I do a search for Micro Four Thirds lenses for my very modern Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II, there's one lens. And in all honesty, the 12-50 isn't my favorite lens of the standard zooms for Olympus. So I was just sort of thinking, you know, maybe this situation, and it's not much different on the DSLR side, at least for those of us that shoot Canon. I mean, Canon makes some killer dedicated macro lenses, but then again, so does Olympus and Panasonic. The dedicated lenses are fantastic. But I went and checked my zooms for my Canon DSLR, same thing. In fact, they don't really close focus at all. I think the one that did the best of the bunch was not even a zoom, as my little 40mm f2.8 does a reasonable job of getting close. So I was thinking, because of this situation, we're probably not shooting, you know, very many close-up shots. And, you know, and I think that's a shame, because close-up photography has some distinct advantages. In fact, I'm going to give you a few of them right now. I'm going to give you three. I know I usually do five, but for macro, I want to stay focused. We're going to do three reasons why I think macro photography is really neat. First reason, macro images immediately look different than other shots. So if I'm presenting a slideshow and I drop a killer macro image in that group, I literally can hear the gasp in the room. Have you ever had that happen? You know, you're rolling along, you got a landscape, got a portrait, and then you, boom, drop a macro on them, flower, bee, butterfly, whatever it happens to be. People go, they do. You can hear it. It has an immediate impact. Same thing. I think part of the reason why it did well on Instagram, the bee on lavender shot, is because, you know, you're rolling along, you see shot, you see, okay, here's my lunch, here's the landscape, here's the boom. Here's a really tight shot of a bee on a lavender flower. And then you go, wow, that's really neat. So it has immediate impact. And that's one of the things that I love about close-up photography. And in fact, I used to say when I was teaching at the junior college, one of two ways to really make your photographs look different than other people's. One is to shoot at twilight, do twilight shots. And the other is to shoot close-up or macro mode. If you integrate those shots into all the other work that you're doing, your shots will definitely, and your presentations will definitely have more impact than those of your comrades. Okay? All right, so that's one reason. The impact. Boom. Second reason. I've learned more about the natural world through shooting macro photography than I really ever did any other way, including, well, I won't say more than I learned in biology classes in college, because I learned a lot there. But part of the reason why I learned a lot was I was shooting macro photography and then examining what was going on and writing about it. So anyway, I guess it all contributes, right? You know, I mentioned the lavender flower earlier because I shot that bee shot on it. That is a perfect example because when you look at a lavender flower from normal viewing distance, it's okay. It's kind of nice, you know, sort of pretty. It's lavender. And then you look at a macro shot of it and you go, wow, I didn't know all that was going on in there. Seriously. And in fact, to prove my point, I had this interesting thing. So I showed Teresa the close-up bee shot because I try to keep her up to speed on, you know, what I'm taking pictures of, mainly because I don't want any surprises later on. Anyway, so I showed her the shot and I said, yeah, there were these cool lavender bushes and these bees on them. And she goes, well, that's not a lavender flower. And I go, no, actually it is. And she goes, no, they don't look like that at all. Well, she was looking at the macro version of it. She's used to the way that we normally look at lavender flowers. And so I had to like show her some lame iPhone shot that I had taken at the same time, you know, with my bike locked up, and you could see the lavender bushes, you know, next to the bike, you know, more at a distance that people are used to looking at lavender. I said, no, it was these bushes right here. Those are lavender bushes. And she goes, wow. Okay. And then, so of course, still not believing me, isn't that the way it goes, guys? Still not believing me, then she pulls up her laptop and she's, you know, looking up lavender flowers online, looking at close-up shots of lavender flowers and comparing them to my bee shot. Finally, after she did that and she saw that, she goes, oh, wow, that does look like your shot, doesn't it? And I go, yes, it is. It's my shot. And probably about 5 minutes later, I finally convinced her that that indeed was a lavender flower. So that is very interesting to me, how different things can look when you get in close compared to how we're normally looking at them. And I think that's why we love flower shots so much, macro flower shots. But all sorts of stuff looks very different when you get in close. So that is another reason, not only for learning purposes, but just for general interest. And then, you know, the third thing is that it's darn handy for everyday life. I don't really like taking a lot of notes while I'm out and about in the world. Someone gives me a business card. I don't really want to carry the business card around. In fact, what I like to do is just take a picture of it, then hand it back to them, because it's a lot easier for me to catalog the picture than it is to, you know, keep track of the paper business card. And I'm not going to take that paper business card, go back to my computer and enter it in my address book. I can tell you right now. So I take pictures a lot of times instead of write stuff down. I take pictures of labels and tags and cards and, you know, just about anything else. Having close focusing capability makes that whole process a lot better because, yes, I could take it from a distance and then crop it and be able to read it because my cameras have good resolution. But why do all that if you can just focus close, just have it fill the frame, whatever it is that you're taking a picture of, and then be done with it. You're done, right? You don't have to crop. You don't have to do anything. It's just boom. It's just right there. And having close-up focusing capability just makes that process so much easier. And if you're not using your camera to take notes, then I highly recommend it. This isn't really macro photography, but another way that I really think this is important is when you're traveling and you're taking pictures at historic sites and things like that, there's almost always a placard around. And so you shoot the thing itself, and then you take a picture, a nice tight picture of the placard so you can read it, and you have all your notes on the subject right there with the pictures. So using your camera as a note taker is much easier if it has a close-up focusing capability, especially for those small objects. So those are, you know, three of the reasons why I just like having macro built in. You know, I don't want to have to change lenses to do any of this stuff. Now, if I'm doing a macro project, like if I know I am going to shoot a series of flower shots, then, yeah, I'm going to get out my Olympus 60mm f2.8 macro lens, and I'm going to kill it, right? Because that lens is just wonderful. But a lot of my everyday life close-up photography shots are not that way, and I'm not carrying that 60 millimeter around with me all the time. It's an extra lens for a specific purpose. So I pull it out of the cabinet when I need it, and otherwise it stays in there. And, you know, part of the reason why I'm slightly frustrated with the fact that a lot of our everyday zooms now don't have this really nice close-focusing capability is because the cameras themselves, especially the Olympus cameras, Pentax, DSLRs, all of them, any camera that has sensor-based image stabilization, the Sony cameras, all those, they're perfect for this, right? Because the biggest challenge in close-up photography, as you increase that magnification, is camera shake, right? Is holding it really steady to get a nice, sharp shot. And I don't want to carry a tripod around with me any more than I want to carry an extra lens. In fact, even less than carrying an extra lens. So having cameras with image stabilization in them, in the body, just makes it even the more obvious to include macro more often in our everyday lenses. So anyway, what I wanted to do was just get you thinking about close-up photography and, you know, whatever you have to do to incorporate it more in your life, maybe mix it in just a bit more. And like I said, boy, if you have it with you all the time, even better, because you are going to get a lot of cool shots that you otherwise would not get. And I guess maybe a fourth thing I could add to my list is that, you know, when you're out and about or traveling or doing whatever, and you're just not seeing anything to shoot, nothing is singing to you, go close. Start going close. You start going close, suddenly anywhere on the planet can become interesting. And it'll get you going, you get warmed up, and then next thing you know, you're getting some cool shots. Again, the advantage of being able to shoot macro, and especially macro on the fly. So my bottom line is, if you're not shooting close-up shots regularly, then I recommend that you find an easy way to do so. Otherwise, you're just missing out on a lot of photo opportunities and missing out on a lot of beauty that our natural world has to offer. In the news. This one is sort of trippy. I hadn't really thought about it from this angle. This is a piece on Petapixel. I'll read it to you and then I'll comment about it. Your photos could be illegally for sale on Amazon. The internet has become the Wild West of copyright infringement, and the fact that so many photos are illegally republished around without permission and or attribution makes enforcement tough for the photographers behind them. If you've ever shared your images on the web, there's one big name place they could show up for sale without your permission, Amazon.com. So instead of grabbing copyrighted photos from photographers' website, it seems that some Amazon sellers, such as HD Pics and Wall, may have harvested photos from other websites that illegally offer copyrighted photos for free. The seller then described the photos as public domain and began selling prints and products on Amazon. So, you know, the reason why I chose this story for our news piece this week is, first of all, the whole copyrighted photos thing, or I should say the whole infringement on copyrighted photos, has been in the news a lot lately. And I guess because it's so pervasive and we're just seeing more and more instances of it. But this one to me is not one I had really thought about, where other people are posting images on their site that are copyrighted, but, you know, they're saying, you know, they're public domain. And then other sites are harvesting images from these sites that are saying that they're public domain when they're really not. And therefore, the second site, such as this Amazon seller, then can say, hey, you know, we got them from a site of public domain photos. It's okay. We're not doing anything wrong. When in fact, the pictures often are copyrighted and should not be used without permission and definitely not without payment to the photographer. So is this really illustrating how weird this has become? And, you know, you're thinking about, you know, these other sites. Well, you know, what harm can they do if they they pick some pictures and post them on there and say they're for public domain and yada, yada, yada. And even I had thought, well, you know, they're not, it's not like they're making money off it or whatever. They probably are off the advertising traffic or whatever. But then the fact that these other sites go there, harvest those photos, and you could even envision some sort of conspiracy around all of this. Well, okay, now that's bad. And now suddenly your stuff showing up on posters, greeting cards, coffee mugs, whatever, for sale. You're not getting a penny. You're not even getting acknowledgement that it's your shot. So this is really, really getting kind of sticky. And I'm not thrilled at all. And, you know, I wish right now I could just offer you, you know, like this magic wand solution for, you know, photos, for protecting your photos. But the fact of the matter is, at least to my knowledge, is that if you're going to protect your work online, it takes work. It does. It takes work. It takes, it's a certain percentage of your time to install some sort of system and then to find the shots using whatever system you're using that are being used without permission, and then following up and, you know, sending out the notifications and cease and desist and you owe me money and all that kind of stuff, or hiring someone to do it for you. No matter how you slice it, this is not a pretty situation, not a pretty story, and really, I think, one of the darker sides of internet publishing. Well, on a brighter note, however, the third episode of the Nimble Photographer podcast is now live, and this new episode is called Busted, and so I was listening to it while I was, you know, touching up the edits and everything on it, and I just really enjoyed it. I did. And it's four stories about how I suddenly became a southpaw. You know, I mentioned this last week. And this happened about, what, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. And, you know, I hadn't listened to the podcast since I recorded it. I think I recorded it over a year ago. You know, and I have to go through and update and all this stuff for our new site. But I enjoyed it, and hopefully those of you that are listening to it, that you're getting a kick out of these and having some fun with them. They're for our Patreon supporters, and we have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story to take you over to the Patreon site. The cool thing about this one, what I did this time, is I put a five-minute excerpt that really is a whole story for free. So if you go over to the Patreon site, you know, click on the tile, go over there. It's just patreon.com/thedigitalstory. You can do it right now. patreon.com/thedigitalstory. You go there, you can listen to one of these stories. It's just there. You just play it and right on the Patreon site and enjoy it. Have fun with it. And like I said, I'm having fun doing these. I hope you're having fun listening to them. And everyone who has become a supporter on Patreon, thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's, you know, your support is making this podcast available for you and really for everyone else. All right, here's an interesting piece. This one made me smile. This is Scott Kelby on the new Lightroom app for Apple TV. Scott's blog is a good blog. I like it a lot. So last week, he ran this Q&A about the new Lightroom app for Apple TV. I'm sure you've heard about it, especially if you're a Lightroom user, that if you have the fourth generation Apple TV, there's now a Lightroom app that you can download. You can tap into your catalog. You need Creative Cloud, right? You need to have mobile sharing. But you can tap into your catalog that's online and show the pictures via Apple TV. That's kind of cool. It's neat. And they look really good. So anyway, Scott did the post about that. But then he also did this little Q&A at the end. And this is what I want to read you because I really like this. All right. Question. What will be the answer to every question in this Q&A? Answer. It will be no. Question. Will it work on older Apple TVs? No. Can you add background music to the slideshow? No. Can you edit photos in it? No. Can you change the order of the images using it? No. Is there a version for Roku? No. Does it work with more than one catalog? No. Does it work with Amazon Fire? No. Couldn't you just use AirPlay from your iPhone or iPad and still see all of your images on TV and then do everything that Lightroom Mobile can do, but seeing it all on your TV screen? And wouldn't that also work with older Apple TVs as well? Yes, you could. And yes, it would. I thought you said that all the answers would be no. Okay, no. That's a nice bit. I really liked it. And then he wraps up by saying, well, there you go. It's new. It's free. Don't whine. Oh, Scott, you're a funny guy sometimes. All right. Let's see. Let's wrap up here. Just two updates. First of all, I want to remind you about the Apple Photos book for photographers. This is a terrific book that will give you the ins and outs of photos for Mac OS X. And by the way, I've downloaded the public beta of Mac OS Sierra, and I'm working with the new Photos app right now. And it's cool. It's cool. I mean, if you watch the keynote, you got a look at it. But I'm, you know, actually using it, and I'm not having any problems at all. I think it runs really well, and I like the new features. So, again, this app just keeps getting better and better. But the book that's out right now is perfect for the application that's out right now. You know, they're both in sync. And then we're going to keep up. We're going to keep up. When the new version comes out, we'll release an update and so on and so forth. And by the way, you can save $5 off the download price, so you can get it for $15 by using a checkout code Apple15. And this is from the Rocky Nook site, rockynook.com. And I have a link to all of this stuff and everything else I've talked about in today's show in the show notes. And finally, make sure you visit our good friends and fellow printing comrades over at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And they are the folks that know printing inside and out. You know, the thing that I mentioned last week, I was thinking about it as I was editing the podcast and even afterwards about, you know, their great printer reviews. And here's the thing. You know, I have people ask me all the time, well, I want to get into printing, but I just sort of have this old multi-purpose all-in-one kind of printer, and I'd like to get a real photography printer, you know, one that's really photo quality. And I was thinking, just go over to Red River Paper, read the printer reviews, and that will help you make your decision. And it's just so obvious. Again, there's all these things that are going on, and I know about them, and I go, I should have been telling people this. So do that. I mean, you can use all the other sources, but the nice thing about Red River Paper is that they really know printing. They really know printing, and their reviews are going to be different than everyone else's. And then, you know, after you read their reviews and you find one that you like, then you can read a few other reviews about that particular printer, and, you know, and they'll probably bring up other stuff that's maybe not quite so printing geek-centric. But at any rate, those reviews can be really helpful if you're thinking about buying a printer, whether you're buying a used one or a new one. They've got all sorts of reviews there. Plus, they have all the supplies you need. Plus, they have ink, envelopes, you name it. Red River Paper, a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go there. Go to our landing page. There's usually some sort of goodie, some sort of offer there. Get yourself some printing paper and make something beautiful. All right, well, that's going to do it for me this week. I'll tell you, close-up photography, it's one of the secrets. It's one of the ways to just kill it. Think about bringing a little bit more macro into your life. All right, until next week, have a great week. Bye-bye now.